Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota. We are the One, 95.1 FM, and of course in September celebrating 50 years serving the Northfield community on 1080 AM. Beautiful day today, plenty of sunshine, a little bit of snow yesterday. It is a weird April 9th, and the year is 2018. Guess what? Guess what I saw on my way into work this morning, which I haven't seen for, I want to say, literally years and years. I saw a pheasant. Then I saw another pheasant. And then I saw a third pheasant. I was so excited. I haven't seen pheasant for years. I remember when our studio was located under the tower out in Waterford Township. We actually hunted on our acreage out there way back in the late 60s and early 70s, but they somewhat disappeared, and I hadn't seen a pheasant for so long. It was pretty exciting, and if you want to know where, I'll tell you. You know where County Road 22 is? Between 246 and County Road 20, south of Northfield, out in Bridgewater Township. That's where I saw it. They were curbside, and one was in the field, and it was curbside. They were on the side of the road in a field, and the other one flew across my windshield and landed to my left, and I go, wow, I'm glad I didn't hit that. So, now that I got that out of my system this morning, let's join my guest, and this is part one and a half, and his name is Dave Bates. And Dave, thank you very much for coming in again this morning. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And, of course, last Thursday you were my guest, but unfortunately I can't believe it, but I overslept, and I really couldn't dial in. I felt so ashamed of being late in radio. That's a no-no. And then, of course, I have this great guest on the air, and I hope things went well with us. I assume they did after about 10 o'clock.
Yep, everything went smooth.
And you have quite an interesting stories, and I want to hear them all. But let's give a thumbnail sketch for those that may have missed our first interview last week at 9:21 when I was late. And let's start all over. Where were you born?
I was born in 1954 in Milwaukee at St. Vincent's Home for Unwed Mothers. Then I was adopted by two wonderful people, Larry and Mary Bates, up in Medford, Wisconsin, north central Wisconsin. So that's where I went to grade school at Holy Rosary School, which this coming weekend they're having their 50th anniversary of the 8th grade class. In 1968, I was in 8th grade. Went through high school, Medford Senior High School. Participated in sports, all three, football, wrestling, track. And then, of course, studied college prep. And even then, I'll add a little bit. In 1968... I bought a Ford Model A pickup truck in 1928 for $200 from the local sheriff, and anyway, started restoring that. So I, of course, you know, being up in northern Wisconsin, and we're the home of Tombstone Pizza up there, that's our big claim to fame, I would drive that old pickup truck around in the back roads when I was still only about 14, 15 years old. I still have that pickup. And now it's got a 427 Chevrolet engine in it.
Oh, my gosh.
I used to use it for drag racing, and we'll get into that a little later. But after going to school at Medford Senior High School, went on then to University of Wisconsin Stout over in Menominee. And took up...
I talked to my buddy, Stu Voigt,
okay,
about Mike Webster.
Yes.
And he had nothing but praise for the guy, except he did have a troubled life.
He had a very troubled life, and again, like we mentioned before, he was kind of the poster child for the brain trauma that in sports, certain sports, especially football, came about, especially in the 70s and 80s. Anyway, we lost Mike back around, I think, 2004 or 2005. He was originally from Rhinelander, And I found out not too long ago, that's where my birth mother was from. And so on their airport is named Webster Airport up there. But I went to school at University of Wisconsin, played some football, wrestled, and got into vocational education, automotive, and diesel was my two specialties in there for vocational education. So that's kind of, I guess, I think that's where we stopped off last time. And
well, I wanted to ask you, do you have any memory of the place that you were in the adoptive center for the Catholic Charities?
No, because I was adopted just before I turned three. So I really didn't have anything there. My mother was an RN. She had gone to school at St. Mary's Hospital complex at Mayo. Because both my parents were originally from Durand, Wisconsin, my adoptive parents.
Okay.
They were high school sweethearts. My dad went off to the Marine Corps in World War II, and he made it back. And then he went to Muyu, River Falls, so he was the ag instructor up in Medford. My mother was the county nurse. But when they adopted me, Catholic Charities said, no, Mom has to stay home now. And so she did. And I remember a story they told me. They had me for about 6 months. And everything was going okay. My mother received a phone call from the Diocese of Superior from a nun. And she says, I'm sorry, Mary, but your adoption has been revoked. Oh, my mother. And, of course, I got this all from my father, you know, my mom's story.
Sure.
And she was just beside herself. So she called my dad. You get home right away. I'm not letting go of little David, you know. And so anyway, then my dad stayed home and didn't hear anything that day. The next day, they heard nothing. Finally, my dad said, I got to get back to school. He says, I'll get the old sheriff up here. Nobody's taking nobody till we find out what's going on here. It was another 2 weeks. Finally, the head sister up there gave a call and said, oh, I'm so sorry. Sister Terebia had the names mixed up. And my father said, he says, I never had such a rough time sleeping with your mother. We put you between the two of us. You would kick and scream so much, we'd put you back upstairs, and she'd bring you down, then upstairs. So he says, but we made it through there, so that's why we ended up with you for good then. But I can only imagine my poor mom, going through that trauma of being told that the adoption was revoked.
Well, let's stick on that subject, okay?
Okay.
When did they tell you that you were adopted?
As soon, I suppose, 4 or 5 years old, because my folks then had my sister, Barbara Bates, 2 years after they picked up me. 2 years later, they had my brother, Mike.
A natural biological?
Yes. Yep. And then 10 years later, being that they were good Catholics, good knee benders, they had my youngest little brother, Steve. He was the surprise in 1963. So we had the family all set, and as tough as kids tease each other and fight, you know, fat so skinny, all this stuff. They never, my brothers and sisters, never said, you're not a real Bates or anything like that. So anyway, no, that went pretty well. I would many, many times through high school, and especially getting out into the business world and that, people would start talking about adoption. I would tell them I'm adopted, and that, you know, many times goes off into something. And I would wonder, do I have brothers and sisters? Who's my mom? Who's my dad? I asked my parents, and they said, we've really never knew. But then finally, in about 2008, my mother, we were back visiting Medford, my wife and I, and she says, Dave, can you come here? I have to tell you something. I says, geez, Mom, are you pregnant or something?
Yeah.
She goes, oh, for God's sake. She says, no. But she says, I need to tell you something. I went down and saw Ray Scott, the old attorney. You know, he's just about 100 years old, and he did your adoption papers. And I asked him to see your original birth certificate. And he said, Mary, I can't show you that. You know state law here in Wisconsin. She says, well, then I'm going to tell Edith, your wife, all the women you've been out with. And he goes, well, that's not true. Well, so what? I want to find out. And he laughed. He says, well, I can't tell you that the birth certificate says Sally Ann Hannon, Rhinelander, Wisconsin, father unknown. And she said, thank you. She went back, and then she told me this. I says, well, Mom, I really don't need to know that. You put up with all my hot rods, airplanes over the years, good Lord, all my traveling and that. You're a saint, you know. She says, well, it's important you know, because maybe someday medically you'll need to know, you know, for your three kids. And I says, okay. Sadly, Mom died of a stroke a month later. And she felt it was very important for me to know, you know. And my father was still, you know, they both. They were very, very much. They said, good luck. Hopefully you can find this lady. Well, I looked around a little bit. Didn't have much success. I called Catholic Charities. They told me to read the book, The Girls That Went Away. And the author interviewed about 104 gals back in the 50s and 60s when we had closed adoption. It was very common between Lutheran Brotherhood and Catholic Charities. And they said that it's very traumatic. The girls usually were told, you know, just forget about it and move on with life. Well, my brother then, Michael, says, you know, I live up in Eagle River. He was a sales rep for Tombstone Pizza. And he says, can you mind if I do a little snooping around? I says, go for it. I said, I'm no whiz with these computers and that. Well, sure enough, a week later, he calls me. I found your mom. She lives in Rhinelander. Her last name is Trump. And I says, okay, here's a number. Give her a call. Oh, I stared at that for 6 months. Finally, I gave the number a call. The lady answers. She says, hello, this is Connie. Well, my mom told me it was Sally, but I still said, well, hi, don't hang up. This is Dave Bates. I grew up in Medford. Do you know the Ludwicks? Oh, yes, yes, I know. Okay, so I said, well, I'm not a salesman, so just okay. And we talked for about 10 minutes or so, and she said, wonderful lady. And she finally said, well, what's the reason for you calling? And I said, well, does this date mean anything to you? May 2nd, 1950, and I heard the phone drop, kalump, on the floor, and I'm going, oh, my God. I better call 911 or something, you know. All of a sudden, she picks up the phone, and she says, you're him. Are you my mother? No, that's my older sister, Sally. She lives in Carlsbad, California. And so anyway, that's where I got my first real lead. And then from there, that was another adventure, tracking down my mom.
So that was your aunt that you talked to?
Correct.
And did you share with her what your
Absolutely.
Business?
Absolutely. We talked for over 3 hours on the phone. I went up and met her family because there was just two daughters in the family. Their dad owned the Rhinelander Paper Mill, a very well-to-do family. She was an attorney, a retired attorney, and she filled in me all the details.
What year did you do this?
2008.
Okay, 10 years ago.
Yep, about 10 years ago, yep. In fact, Connie just passed away this past winter. I got to meet...
Did you go to the funeral?
No, I wasn't able to. We were overseas. My wife and I were overseas, but we stay in touch, and she's got a wonderful family. She has a son named Tom who, when we first saw each other, we started laughing because we look a lot alike, and that was scary.
Yeah.
But they're wonderful, and they welcome me, and I was new Uncle Dave.
All right, so now we have to get to Carlsbad, California.
Yep.
And before we do that, I have to get a message out about the QB, the Quarterback Club.
Okay.
On Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield. They're serving breakfast, of course, until 10 o'clock, Monday through Saturday. We invite you to go. You have 45 minutes to stop in and order anything you want. Coffee and donuts, bacon and eggs, hash browns, whatever you want. Malta meal, they got it all. And then, of course, at noontime, that's the time you want to go for their great luncheons. They have very nice specials. Every week, every day of the week, and people just eat up the roasted chicken, and you can order ahead and have it all ready to go, and their coleslaw is like dessert. The Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in downtown Northfield, Minnesota. David Bates is my guest this morning on KYMN Radio. And right now we're talking about his being adopted and raised by two wonderful people. And 10 years ago, he found his biological mother through the efforts of his brother, Mike, and they put it all together, called his number that he was given. It turned out it was his aunt, and then she had a nice conversation with David, and David, you got the number and the location of your birth mother, and how old, let's see, 10 years ago, how old were you?
10 years, I had been 53.
53 years
and,
old.
And my aunt told me that my mother was 21. She was going to be a graduating senior at University of Wisconsin.
At the time of your birth.
Yes, at the time of my birth. So she was already an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, 21 years old.
Yeah, she's doing well. She's going to graduate in
She was the class president in 1940. 9, I believe, or whatever, at the Rhinelander High School. She was one of the it girls. They didn't have much for athletics for gals back then, but she was one of the popular girls.
Is this story going to end up with your father being the football player and homecoming king?
You got one third of it there right, and I'll tell you. This is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
Well, Connie told me that...
Connie's the aunt.
The aunt said that your mother, Sally, was ostracized by her father. Being they were Catholics, of course, German Catholics, you know. In other words, you know, stay away. And you just can't imagine that today. But that's, I guess that's the way it was back then. So after she had me in May, she went back to summer school, finished up the school. She was an English teacher. So she taught then for 1 year in Wausau, Wisconsin, married a man there named Jim Hannon. He was a science teacher. They then moved physically as far away from Rhinelander as you can get. They went to Carlsbad, California, basically a suburb of, it's right by Camp Pendleton, out there by San Diego. I mean, that's even further away than the Four Keys. So she moved away, and she didn't come back for 20 years. Oh, she would send cards and talk, but she just physically stayed away. Her father passed on. And then Connie told me that she, in 1969, she was a teacher of the year. She was actually taught then at Camp Pendleton, the Navy brats, I guess you'd want to, you know, the way Connie described it, and her husband taught there. But she had a very difficult problem. She loved men too much. Well, sadly, she was having an affair with the principal there. And evidently, a husband came home, he found the two in bed. Anyway, later he committed suicide. I mean, it's really a tragedy, this one. Then she married the principal. They stayed married for 10 years. Then they divorced. Then she became a vodka alcoholic. And I asked Connie, I says, well, how do you know that? And Connie, being an ex-attorney, a bright woman, she says, well, we went out to visit her, and I asked if I could have a drink out of her water bottle. I was getting thirsty, and she says, oh, no, Connie, you don't want any of that water. And Connie says, well, what do you mean? She took it and put it up by her lips, and, oh, my God, it was vodka. Well, she would numb herself, basically, on weekends, and still, during that time, she became Teacher of the Year. So a very determined person. Well, she... quit drinking, but then became kind of bitter towards life. I found out, though, I had a brother named James Hannon.
I was going to ask you if you had half-siblings.
Right, okay. Have one. James Hannon, he was born 5 years later, 1959. And Connie had pictures of him. Oh, Lordy, he's a handsome boy. He was a professional surfer, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, very popular guy. Okay. But it was always a little different, Connie said. He just was always a little different, you know. And I said, well, kind of like the hippie beach bum. Yeah, kind of like that, you know. Okay. Well, I was excited, you know, because I grew up, I was, you know, 6'2", 6'3", lineman, you know, the rest of my family. I looked like Milton the Monster, I always told people. While we're walking in the church, I looked like the bodyguard. But I decided then, okay, I'm going to write my mother a letter. Wrote a letter, never heard back. Wrote another letter, never heard back. And the book kind of said, the author of the book, The Girls That Went Away, said...
Can I ask you, when you were writing those letters, were they lengthy letters, or were they, may I please contact you?
Right. The first one was, hello, I'm your son, you know, a little bit of facts. I'd love to say hello, we can do it discreetly. I could stop out and meet you at any other location. We'll keep it, you know, because, again, the shame that was put on these gals back then was horrendous. It's totally different now. It's open adoption now. But basically, that's what, she was just so guilt-ridden. And Connie, the aunt, told me, she says, Dave, I don't think she's ever going to see you. I'll be honest with you. I know it might break your heart. And, again, yeah, being a big lineman, fly airplanes upside down, do all this cool stuff. Boy, I tell you what, sometimes, yeah, you know, I envy people that, well, my big deal was, where's my family tree? Now, Connie filled in most of it. I'm 88% Bulgarian and 12% Polish. So my wife just, and she's 100% Italian, you know, she's from Milan, Italy. So, oh, my God, you know, what a combination. But then, after I sent two letters, didn't hear anything, my wife had to do some speaking at the Scripps Institute. She's a neurologist at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester and director of practice. So she says, come on, let's go. And she's, like I say, from Italy, so a heavy accent. And I'm going to contact your mother. Oh, I don't know if we want to do that, dear. And she says, nope, we get out there, I'm going to call her. Oh, I'll call her. Okay. So sure enough, this would be 3 years ago. We went out there, I called her up. And this is the first time I spoke with her. And I says, you know, hello, Sally. This is David. I know who you are. How are you doing? Very matter of fact. I says, fine. How are you doing? Very well.
She knew who you were because of your aunt.
Of my aunt, okay. Exactly. And my aunt had, in fact, when I sent the second letter, I sent about 20 8x10 pictures. My 3-year-old picture when I was adopted, picture of my house in Westboro, Wisconsin, in Medford, my high school graduation, my college football picture of my airplane, my old cars, my kids. And I numbered them all. It was 1 through 26 up in a little corner because she says, Connie told me, she won't even open it. Well, sure enough, I got that envelope mailed back and from my mother. And so, oh boy, I opened it up. But then I looked at the numbers. Ah, they're all mixed up. She looked at it. By George, she looked at it. Okay, that's a start. Now, it doesn't sound like much, but to me, my heart soared. I was really happy. So, anyway, getting back to now we're out in San Diego, basically, Carlsbad. And I call her up, and I says, Sally, I'd love to just meet you. Any place. You pick the most discreet place, and we'll just have a little coffee. And I've got my wife along. We just kind of talk and, you know, talk about the old families and whatever. And she says, you know, I'd like to do that. Really? Okay. She says, go with here. Gave me the address and everything, and we'll do it this coming Saturday. I think this was on a Thursday. I said, okay, wonderful. Well, that night we got back to our hotel room. I see a light flashing. Oh, I got a message. And I check it, and it says, hello, Dave, this is Sally. I would never say mother. This is Sally, and I can't meet with you Saturday. It would do me great harm. Take care. Goodbye. Oh, I sat down on the bed. And, of course, my northern Italian wife, oh, well, I'm not going to settle for that. You have every right to meet your mother. Okay, dear, what do you think we should do? We're going to go drive to her place. Well, and then what? I'll knock on the door, and we'll say hello. The most she can do is, you know, and I'll stick my foot in the door like my father used to do as a salesman in Milan, Italy. Oh, this should be fun. So, sure enough, that Saturday we drove, found we had her address. She had a nice place, a condo overlooking the Pacific Ocean, little one-bedroom apartment. And so I stood over in the corner, around the corner, you know, here's a what? Basically almost a 60-year-old man hiding from his mother, you know, and my wife knocks on the door, and oh my God, the door opens, and I just figured it's going to slam shut, and she says, hello, and my wife, Paola, says, hello, I'm David Bates's wife, and he's here. By that time, I was standing there, and she says, good, would you like to come in and talk? And she looked just like me. I was basically speechless. She was so professional. She says, come on in. Let me show you pictures of my son, my other son, James. There he was. And he's a teacher, an art teacher in McKinleyville, California, north of San Francisco. Sometime you have to meet him. He's a very open-minded person. Oh, I'm sure you two would get along great. I was beside myself. At the Scripps Institute, my wife spoke with a psychologist, Norman Starr, crazy old Jewish New York guy. In fact, he had won a couple of awards for his work in psychology. And he says, Dave, when you meet your mother, she will talk to you for 15 to 20 minutes. Then she will ask you to leave. That's all she'll be able to handle. Otherwise, she will break down. And I thought, no, once usually I start talking, you know, it's hard to get me to shut up and we'll be okay, you know. Oh, no. We'll talk for hours. In fact, I asked her, do you have anything going on this morning, Sally, just so we aren't interrupting? Oh, no, I've got the whole morning open. At exactly about 15 to 16 minutes, she looked at her phone and says, you know, I forgot I've got an appointment. I'm going to have to ask you two to leave now. And since we've met, there's really no reason to ever have any more contact. And then my wife stood up and said, Sally, you are his mother. He has every right in contacting you, and you have every obligation in acknowledging it. And she says, and then I thought, oh, God, here we start a catfight, you know. And she says, No, you're right, doctor. You're right. And I'm sorry, Dave, I said that. I do struggle with this. I said, thank you for taking the time. And she escorted us out. As we were walking back to our car, I swear I could feel my parents up in heaven, and Paula turned to me, typical Northern Italian, because they've got an attitude like a New York City person who lives in Detroit.
What parents up in heaven?
My adopted parents. They had both passed away now.
Okay.
And she says, Dave, you are so lucky that you were adopted by Larry and Mary. You had wonderful parents. This lady has a lot of scar tissue in memories and emotionally scarred. That wouldn't, you know, okay. So, sure enough, a year later, we had to go to San Francisco. Paula had to give a speech there on neurology, so she says, you know where we're going? No, where's that? We're going to McKinleyville. Oh, that's wonderful. Let's go up there. So we drove up to McKinleyville. I'm going to meet my brother. I call him on the phone. And he answers, and he says, hello, this is Jim. And I go, hi. And I had sent him a couple letters, but never got them back, but didn't think too much of it. I says, hi, this is Dave Bates. I'm your half-brother from Wisconsin. Click. He hung up. My wife goes, what happened? I says, he hung up. Give me the phone. No. Let's just leave it lay for now. I wonder why. She said, you know what? Your mother was just putting a rouge on. I think he's scarred too. I think all those problems she had with drinking and other men and all this stuff, I think sadly he's got some trouble. So, boy, and again, I have my other three brothers and sisters, thank goodness, and all that stuff, and my dad had 12 brothers and sisters in his family. One is a nun, Sister Mary Bates. She's down at the Franciscan nuns. I think my wife always says she's 9,000 years old. And I remember my wife asking Sister Mary, Sister, how do you nuns live so long? She said, oh, simple. We don't have any terrible husbands and no bratty kids. You know, no say at all, and just sharp as a tack. And she was always a cheerleader for me in my quest here and that. But I pretty much now have left it alone with my brother. But I did call back to my cousins, in other words, Connie's daughter, and talked with them. And they said, we didn't want to say much, Dave, when we heard you were going to contact Jim, but we kind of figured this is what was exactly going to happen. I says, well, why is that? Well, it's not so much he's so much scarred or anything, but he's married a religious right-wing gal, very wealthy family up in McKinleyville. McKinleyville is like a Beverly Hills up by San Francisco. And she says, we assume that he never told what grandma really was like, that had an illegitimate son and, found in bed with another man and the husband committed suicide, because he married into some very big money. We're talking multimillionaire family. I says, oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, he just wants to keep that door closed. There's no benefit. Probably more of a loss, because grandma's still alive, see. Even though she would be okay, probably, with it, your mother. Mm-mm. We've met his wife a couple times, and maybe they wouldn't. But anyway, so that's what's happened to my brother. I've sent him a couple postcards from when I'm traveling as cabana boy for my wife around the world. But I always end them as just, take care, Dave. I know he probably can't hear me now, but I'm just saying the next one. In fact, I think we head for, we're going to Florence. She's got to speak, and then up to Lyon, France here in May. I'm going to send a postcard, but I'm going to sign it, I think, your brother, Dave. I want to send a postcard because maybe his wife will pick it up, and she'll go, who's this? Maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. I'll go. My wife, of course, she's saying, do it,
Okay, so what did your brief, when you met with your mother briefly 10 years ago, did your father, your biological father, come up, and what picture did she paint?
Oh, no. I have to admit, I didn't even ask. I was just, because I thought we'd be talking for a while. What I know about him is the fact that my mother was engaged her senior year to a medical student. And he ultimately became a surgeon in Milwaukee. In fact, my wife, the doctor, had heard of him in that, and a very well-known orthopedic surgeon. But she broke it off because when she found out she was pregnant, she just broke it off. And her father, my mother's father, just, my God, what are you doing? You know, nope, I just don't like him anymore. Just nope. Well, she was pregnant with me. And, you know, the stigma and everything that's being attached. That's why she on her own went to that St. Vincent's Home for Unwed Mothers in November, had me in May, then went back to school to finish up. But her sister told me that what happened was she got mad at him when she went back to school, you know, first part of September, and went out to Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, with three of the Wisconsin football players in 1953, and had a wonderful weekend. Okay.
That's where Playboy was located.
That's exactly right. And had a wonderful weekend. My mother looked like Lauren Bacall. I certainly don't, you know, not handsome, but my mother was very, very attractive. Well, Connie said, because Sally did confide with Connie quite a bit, okay.
Sally's the mother.
Sally's my mother.
Aunt. Okay.
Yep. And so she says, your father is one of those three. What you should do, and I haven't done it, is just simply go online or whatever, Connie said, and just simply look up the football team in 1953 and pick a face that looks kind of like you. And anyway, I haven't done that yet. But
did he know? Do you think he knew?
We're suspecting no. Okay. Because in that time frame, in fact, my aunt, Sister Mary Bates, worked at Children's Hospital in the late 50s and 60s, and she said I would cry every time I would take the child from the mother from the birthing room. Because we told the gal, and this was all in the book, The Girls That Went Away, you know, that Catholic Charities wanted me to read. We would have her write a letter, the whole family history, so that someday the child could read it. We'd burn it. In fact, I had to watch to make sure the ashes were completely burned. And we felt, you know, now we know it wasn't the best, you know, way, but we felt that the best thing to do was, again, turn the page, put that in a box, and move it away. Like she says, look at the TV shows, Father Knows Best, you know, all that type of attitude after World War II, our generation, you know, you got a problem, fix it and move on, you know.
And that's what we're going to do. We're going to move on. What an interesting story. And I know there's some people out there that are listeners that have similar stories that they tell. And I don't know if you remember, I told you my daughter is adopted.
Right, right.
And she, at age 14, went to a lawyer so she could find out her biological parents. And the attorney sent a letter to her, to our house. I opened it up, and she's 14, you know, from an attorney. What's the deal? So I opened it up and thought, wow, that's something. Today, all these years later, she said she has never wanted to do that. I'm more interested than she is. Mm-hmm. But she's, nope, you're my mom.
And, I felt that way for basically 50 years.
Yeah.
I felt an obligation. And yet I still had, you know, definitely a curiosity.
She doesn't even have a curiosity.
Yeah.
But don't even bother bringing it up. I don't care.
Well,
mom's mom, your dad, that's it.
Take that as one of the best compliments for a parent.
Well,
congratulations.
Yeah. We are going to take a break. Our guest this morning is a fellow named Dave Bates, and he's got all kinds of great stories. Stick around.
For being nice. But Minnesota Twins outfielder Byron Buxton is anything but that. Do you think he's trying to be nice when he taunts pitchers on the base path? Nah, the dude will straight up steal whenever he wants. He doesn't even try to be sneaky about it. He'll do it when everyone in the stadium expects it, just to show there's nothing anyone can do about it. This is not Minnesota nice. This is how we baseball. Get your tickets to see the Twins in action at twinsbaseball.com.
Hi, this is Julie from the Northfield Liquor Store. Our profits directly support the community. What does this mean? Well, did you know that over the years, since I first started working at the Muni, we have contributed over $2.5 million to pay for basic city services? This includes everything from police and fire to streets, park and recreation, and the library. So when you shop at the Northfield Muni, you support the home team. You keep the snowplows running in the winter and the potholes filled in the summer, and we thank you.
Hi, this is Steve DeLong, manager of the Northfield Liquor Store. We invite you to come in and check out our great selection of fine wines from around the globe. With nearly 2,000 different labels to choose from, we can help you find the right wine to fit your taste and your budget, no matter what the occasion. You can find all your favorites right here in downtown Northfield at the Muni, where profits directly support the community.
Flexion Care Suites on the campus of Three Links here in Northfield offers comfort care in a home-like environment. We provide compassionate, specialized end-of-life care to residents and families during phases of an incurable illness. We have a wonderful staff that provides the highest quality of care, supporting each resident's personal wishes. I am Susan Samuelson, Clinical Nurse Manager of Reflections. You can call me at 664-8809 for a tour of this beautiful facility.
Don't miss the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at the Veterans Memorial Community Center in Invergrove Heights. See up to 150 home improvement experts. The Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday only. It's the smart place to start your home improvement projects. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while.
You know this one yet?
Oh,
but
yes.
February name that tune.
Me shiver American Pie.
Correct.
Yep.
Remember who did it?
Oh, gosh. Yes, if you said his name.
Don.
I couldn't take one more step. Don McLean.
Right.
Yep.
I can't remember if I.
And if I played this whole thing, we would continue our conversation another 7.5 minutes from now. But yes, American Pie was number 3 in all of the year 1972, the year David graduated from high school in Medford, Wisconsin.
So bye bye, Miss American Pie.
I needed to hear that part.
Yep,
okay.
Yep.
It is already 21 minutes before 10 o'clock. David Bates is my guest here this morning. I'd say that, you know, he's from this place or that place, but he's from kind of like a no place off of Highway 60 down in the lakes area of Faribault, west of Faribault, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
Yep.
Okay. And you built the place yourself?
I was the main contractor. It's a post and beam, a very
post
German,
and beam.
Very
yeah.
German-looking building. As my father said when we were building it, you know, he says, looks like a big old barn because it's all held together by pegs.
And you are a pilot.
Yes.
And you have your plane at the Faribault Airport.
Keep it at the Faribault Airport,
your,
yep.
Your wife is a doctor, and she is has her own you two have another house in Rochester.
Right.
Because commuting is something like a pain in the wherever. And yep. She does her neurological work?
Yep. She's a neurologist.
A neurologist, yeah.
Yep, at the Mayo. In fact, her specialties are Parkinson, Alzheimer's, Lou Gehrig's, ALS, and the big one now that she's actually branched into, chronic pain. So in other words, say there's nothing wrong with your shoulder structurally, but yet you've got, you know, hellacious pain because your electrical system is the way I always keep it straight in my mind. Your electrical system is goofed up.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, we got you through college the last time you were here, U of W, and you played football there and a couple of other sports.
Mm-hmm.
And did you meet any woman there at that time?
Well,
and
actually.
Become a married man with children?
Well, what I did was I actually graduated and then went to work for Thermo King Corporation in Bloomington.
And we had a common friend. The vice president was on the show here. And
yep. And she, when I started there, her last name is Johnson.
Yeah.
She.
Who's related to Bonnie Pavic.
Oh, and, okay.
And other,
okay.
A lot of other people.
And it's such a small world. When I was then fleet manager for Northwest Airlines, kind of winding up my career as my last career job I had, Harlan Johnson is her husband, and needless to say, he was one of my mechanics at Northwest Airlines, so it's a very small world.
I remember when he retired, and he was in an investment group that I started, and he was a pretty sharp kid.
Oh, yes.
Yep, and the first time I ever met him and his wife, and we're both forgetting her first name.
Yep.
was down on a lake in the Faribault area. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was Roberts or whatever. And on a towing, the boat towed like an inner tube.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And it was a whole big party. Mm-hmm. And she was at that party. That's how I met her in Harlan. Yep. So, small world.
Oh, yeah. She was quite a person. She was, when I met her in 1976.
Is it Sherry?
Sherry, that's it. Sherry Johnson. She was a janitor. Okay. Wonderful person. I was teaching truck refrigeration to dealership mechanics. I would work 2 weeks in Minneapolis, and then we'd fly all over North America. And for somebody from northern Wisconsin, you know, who hardly got across the Mississippi River, was everywhere from Yellowknife in the Yukon to Mexico City and everywhere in between. And it was just a wonderful deal. I did it for about 3 years. And Sherry then, and of course I left Thermo King, so kind of drifted away. And come to find out, many years later, almost 30 years later, I'm working at Northwest Airlines at MSP as their fleet manager for all the ground equipment. One of the mechanics walks up about my second day, and he's got kind of a Colonel Sanders goatee and a very laid-back personality. Batesy. Yes. My wife knows you. Uh-oh. Are we in trouble? No, no, no. She remembers you from Thermo. And he always called it Thermo Queen.
Okay.
Thermo Queen. Yeah. I says, oh, my God. Sherry. And I says, yeah. Well, she's vice president now. I believe it was marketing. Anyway, and what a wonder. That's another, and I know you've talked to her, but what a wonderful course. It just shows, you know, her drive and everything and how she performed there and just a wonderful person.
One of the things that she brought up, which I thought was very interesting, at the time that she was on the air, they were having problems with building the radiator system so that it couldn't be accessed by the cartel that were bringing drugs in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big deal. Did you ever, when you were working, ever have to work on cargo that might?
No, because basically, in all fairness, in the late 70s when I was there, 76 to about just about 79, the drug trafficking in that just wasn't as prolific as it became, as simple as that. That was not, because I'd work with engineering, because they'd show me the changes. I'd have to, you know, help. Basically, we developed the training aids, the books, the manuals, and then, you know, say, take it out to the dealerships and train their dealerships, certify them and train them. I can't remember. No, we were primarily concerned with, cool down when you put like, you know, vegetables right from the field, and they do that in California, and oh, they'll be cooled down by the time they get to Minnesota. Well, not necessarily, because the core of it would stay plenty warm and those would spoil. So, I mean, we had other issues, but they were strictly commercial, technical, not the problems with the contraband or, you know, the drugs in that, which I could easily see that happening, because again, when things become cold, the smells, if they walk the dogs through and all that, see, that's why they wanted refrigerated trucks, because that would, you know, hopefully the dogs wouldn't pick it up as much. And they'd all that fun stuff. That much I knew just talking with some old friends at Thermo King.
All right.
But personally, I didn't get involved with the development and what they had to go through to get across the border and to try to stop that trade.
David Bates is my guest this morning on KYMN Radio. So you graduate from the U of W,
mm-hmm.
and then you go to work for the Thermo King?
Thermo
first
King.
Job. Okay, yep. In Bloomington?
In Bloomington on 90th Street there.
How did you find that job?
Well, it was, again, times were different. We had just come out of a recession in 72-3-4. The jobs were there. And that was still at the time you could have a career. Nowadays, my kids, they can't even picture themselves working at one place for 30 years. When I graduated, it was still very much you could plan a career. Well, I was looking at teaching, and in fact, I had a offer to be at a vocational school in Grays Lake, Illinois, just west of Chicago, something like a Bloomington, you know, very prestigious school. It was beautiful. The automotive department, I would teach automotive to the mechanics, but God, it was just a long ways away from northern Wisconsin. And Minneapolis was only about, you know, 2.5-3 hours away from my hometown. I very much was a town, you know. I loved going back to northern Wisconsin. took a long time for me to become part of the metro area. But I took the job then with Thermo King. Plus, it was a 12-month deal, where teaching was only 9 to 10 months. So I took that, and I actually very much enjoyed it. It was, again, teaching mostly adults, you know, per se. You know, and, of course, I was young. I was only 22 years old when I got out of school. But the travel, driving, they had two huge buses, great big old Crown coaches they had converted into training centers. So you'd get on these buses, and off you'd go. And you might pick it up in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and drive to Montreal. And I remember in teaching in Montreal, I had a whole group of Canadian National Railroad guys from northern part of Quebec. And I even had an older lady was sitting there, and she was my interpreter. She would, and just was fantastic, because I talk fast, but she would get in the French, and these guys could somewhat understand English. Well, then I figured, and this is going back a long ways, I says, well, I'll tell him a Polish joke, you know, because I'm Polish, you know, I'll tell him a Polish joke. So I tell him this Polish joke. Did you hear about the Polish? And they just all kind of stood and stared at me. So, okay. So I taught some more, and I told my best Polish joke I could think of. And they just stared at me. Then finally, one of the mechanics, he says, Batesy boy, you gotta make it a noofy joke. I says, well, it's as goofy as I can get. No, 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 he says, you gotta be noofy, Newfoundlanders. Okay, so then I told it, did you hear the one about the noofy that, oh my God, they fell out of their chairs and laughed. And so just different cultures, you know, just funny.
So how long did you do that?
Did that for 2.5 years. And I was getting a little bored because truck refrigeration is pretty, you know, you compress the freon gas, it expands, absorbs, not too much new going on. And I guess in all fairness, a couple times I'd be teaching up front and I would totally lose my train of thought. And what did I just say? I wasn't challenged enough. And so I went back to UW and I says, hey, if one of the big three automakers are looking for some training people, field reps, whatever, give him my name. Sure enough, about 3 months later, I was at home working on my old Model A Ford hot rod, which I was just getting into drag racing now, and I got a call, and it says, hello, this is Gary Auster. Is this Mr. Bates? And I go, yeah, this is, yeah, Dave Bates. How would you like to work at Ford? And I could have swore it was one of my buddies pulling a prank, because I said, you mean that found on the road dead company? Are you kidding? And all of a sudden, it was dead quiet, and I went, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Auster, are you a... Well, Dave, I think you must think I'm one of your friends or something, the way it sounds like. I says, oh, God, please forgive me. I'll get on my knees and I'll wear knee pads and lipstick, you know. And he was just laughing. He says, tell you what, could you stop by when you leave Thermo King? We talked with UW and we'd like to have you come in for an interview. And I said, oh, I'll be there. So I stopped in and
Hold that story for just a second, will you please? It is now 10 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and I have a reminder. Down the Upstairs tells a story of one Harlem family across three generations connecting its journey to the historical and social forces that transformed Harlem over the past century. KYMN's Terry Knight. Her guest today is Bruce D. Haynes. He captures the tide of change that pushed black forward through the 20th century. The Great Migration, the Harlem Renaissance, the early civil rights victories, and more. His family defied the odds in many ways. His great-grandparents were landowners in the 1880s. His grandfather, George, was founder of the National Urban League. And his grandmother, Elizabeth, was a noted children's author and a prominent social scientist. Yet, by the time Bruce was a teenager, his own parents were spiraling down, letting their home fall into complete disrepair. One son, a drug addict, and one murdered. Bruce, a sociology professor, shares the difficult process of writing their history, and that's going to happen today at 11 o'clock on 15 with the author, with KYMN's own Terry Knight.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
All right, America. H&R Block has some good news. For a limited time only, you could get a refund advance loan of up to $3,000 the same day you file at Block. That's right. You could get up to $3,000 today. No interest. Told you it was good news. To learn more or find participating locations near you, visit hrblock.com. Get your taxes, one. Optional tax refund related loan from BofI Federal Bank. Not your tax refund. $500, $750, $1,250, or $3,000 loans offered. Approval and loan amount based on expected refund and other conditions. Funds loaded on prepaid card. Tax returns may be e-filed without applying for this loan. Fees for other products or features may apply.
H&R Block, 1300 Bolenbacher Drive in Northfield. Open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 5. Walk-ins are welcome or call 645-6281 for an appointment.
Graphic Mailbox means business. Our team of experts focuses on saving you time and money by ensuring you get the right products and services at the right price in a single quick visit. We can pack and ship almost anything to almost anywhere in the world. But shipping is only one way we can help make your life easier. In addition to our pack and ship service, we are also Northfield's one-stop shop for signs, banners, large format graphics, and multiple business services. Large or small, Graphic Mailbox can handle it. Come on in. We'll take care of you.
This is David Ludischer of Grundhoffer & Ludischer, Attorneys at Law. Marv and I, and the best legal staff anywhere, are pleased to introduce you to the newest members of our legal team, Jennifer Novak. Jennifer grew up in Lonsdale. She was previously a law clerk to several judges and has years of experience in social work. Jennifer joins Marv, me, and Robin Finke. Robin joined us last year. Robin has over two decades of experience, much of it as a trial attorney. And for the curious, yes, Marv still comes in every day.
This song was number 5 in all of 1972 on Billboard's Top 10. Name that tune.
Oh, I can see clearly now, I think.
That is the name of the song. And I doubt if you're going to be able to name the guy.
Oh, if you say him, I know who it is.
John.
Oh. Nope.
Not Packard.
No.
But right about that era.
Oh.
Not Packard as in automobile.
Right.
They had reclining seats.
Nash? No.
Yes.
Oh, for God's sake.
Johnny Nash.
God, I've got some Nero still working back from those days yet. That's amazing.
I had a Nash. Big four-door.
Yep.
Okay, we are now at 5 minutes before 10 o'clock, and we are talking to a very interesting gentleman by the name of Dave Bates, and he is from Rice County, west of Faribault, off of Highway 60, and he is a guy that has his own biplane, for goodness sakes. Why do I ask people that have biplanes? Because I want to ride, and he's already promised me one. I think I got John Larson.
Hansen.
I say Larson every time. Yep. Nice, good-looking, tall guy like yourself.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to a couple of rides in a biplane.
Yep.
So, but we got you being, you get a phone call from Ford, okay,
yep.
And we go from there. Now, have you had a family at this point yet?
No, in 1977, I met Peggy Heiser. And ultimately, we would marry in 1984. I was a very slow learner in that world. So, and then we had our three children. They're adults now. So we had David.
Okay, that was Peggy, right?
Yep.
Okay. And, of course, are you old enough to remember when rock and roll first? Well, you're a little bit behind me, a lot behind me.
Right.
But when you hear the name Peggy
Sue.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
You, I love you, Peggy. Hey, there's Terry Knight. She's going to be on the air 1 hour and 4 minutes with her 15 with the author. Thank you, Terry. She's putting the shades down. And she, does it feel like a sauna when you walked in here, Terry?
Yes.
Yes, it's nice and warm. I like that. Okay, so in 1984, you got married and you had three children?
Three children,
The first one's name is?
David.
David.
But not a junior or senior. I didn't want to do that to him. So he's just David Lawrence, named after my father, Larry Bates.
Oh, okay.
And then we had John.
Okay.
And 3 years later, we had John. And he's John William because at Ford Motor, the heavy truck field engineer that I replaced was William Bowl, Bill Bowl. And then we had our little surprise. A few years later, we had Annie, our daughter. So two boys and a daughter.
And Annie is how much younger than David or John?
Actually, just a little over 3 years.
Of John?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
So you had them 3 years apart.
Yep. So that worked out pretty well.
But
yep.
Annie was a surprise.
Yes, a bit of a surprise. And again, we were good Catholics, good knee benders, you know. So we had tried the natural method. Well,
yeah, the rhythm method.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
As Grandma Bates told me, she had 12 kids. You know. Of course, back then they had to keep somebody on the farm the whole time they were going to work, you know, on that. But so anyway,
what year was David born?
David was born in 87.
1987. Oh, he had a big birthday, last year.
Yep, yep. And then John was born in 1990, and Annie was 1993.
Perfect.
So it worked out pretty good, yep. And they're doing well. My wife Peggy and I then remained married until 2010. And then we just grew apart, sadly. I still see her probably, good Lord, sometimes once a week or more. You raise three adult kids and now with two grandkids.
What did you do for Easter a couple of weeks ago?
Well, Easter, Peggy took the kids and went back to see Grandma Heiser, okay? And I, of course, ended up with all the Italians down in Rochester and that, so we did that. But
your wife is Italian.
Yes, my current wife, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, Paola. So I couldn't get away from the P's. It was Peggy and now Paola. And
Paola or Paola?
Paola, because Paolo is a boy in
Paola.
Italian. Yeah, and so it ends with an A.
Her name is Paola?
First name, yeah. And her last name is Sandroni. When we married about 8 years ago or so, she kept her maiden name, Sandroni. And the reason is, with two PhDs and all the, well, she's amazingly one of the top neurologists in the world. As she always says, oh, how did I marry some cheesehead from Wisconsin? That's another whole story, because I met her through It's Just Lunch.
Oh, okay.
And back when I was, you know, you still went to the bar and you'd meet the girl. That's where I met my wife, Peggy. We met at Uncle Milty's Disco in 1977 during the disco days. And then she went to school, University of Wisconsin, and became a graphic artist. In fact, she's in town here. She runs Gooter's Dough to Go.
And oh, I've met her.
Yes, yes. Her name is Peggy Weaver. She married a nice guy, Wayne, works at, I'm going to say Carlton, I think. And
that's right next to the subway?
Yeah, right by Menards.
In Dundas. Yeah.
In Dundas, yep. I always call it Maynard's, but over by Menards.
Yeah.
And she's been running that, I think, for 6-7 years. She's in the process of hopefully selling. She wants to retire because she's getting to be close to 60. So she started that process now of hopefully selling it in that. But,
I hope that she appreciates that she got herself a little bit of an ad here.
That's right.
On KYMN Radio.
Right.
No charge.
Yep.
Peggy, no charge. And like I say, I've been in there. I bought some things on occasion.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have to take a break for the news.
Okay.
Okay. And we are KYMN Radio. And we are 1080 on your AM dial for almost 50 years now. And of course, 95.1 FM, the one KYMN Northfield.
The United States weighs its options in Syria. I'm John Trout.
I don't rule out anything right now.
I don't rule out anything right now. The words of Defense Secretary James Mattis when asked by reporters about the U.S. response to heightening tensions in Syria. Mattis continues.
Now, the first thing we have to look at is why a chemical weapon still being used at all when Russia was the framework guarantor of removing all the chemical weapons.
Barbara Starr is covering the story at the Pentagon, where U.S. strategy may already await President Trump's consideration.
Based on the strikes that happened just a year ago in Syria, that the military does not wait to be asked by the president. Options planning, getting options ready for him to look at would already be going on right now.
President Trump vows there will be a price to pay for the attack that killed at least 40 people, including many children. Bob Costantini covers the White House.
Plus, today is the first day on the job for hawkish National Security Advisor John Bolton. A year ago, Mr. Trump ordered missile strikes 3 days after a chemical weapons attack of similar scope in Syria.
Texas has begun to deploy National Guard troops to the U.S.-Mexico border, correspondent Kaylee Hartung reports.
Many of those troops planners having those meetings to discuss and assess the resources various sectors of the Texas border need. So while you have some troops planning, others in supporting roles, essentially desk jobs, doing work behind the scenes to allow Border Patrol agents to get into the field and do their job.
Opening statements are set to begin in the Bill Cosby sexual assault retrial. A topless protester was taken into custody after charging at Cosby as he walked into the courthouse. As Cosby was led into court, the woman was led away in handcuffs. Stocks are opening higher to start the week after the market took a nosedive Friday with fears of a trade war with China. The Dow is up 215 points. I'm John Trout.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Theme song for hour two of the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station, KYMN. Northfield, Minnesota, the home of cows, colleges, and contentment. So, my guest this morning is a gentleman by the name of David Beck.
Bates.
What did I say Beck for? Anyhow, thank you. Batesy, as yes. People that you know well.
Yep.
So, David Batesy, my buddy here, is in studio. Very interesting life. And we just established that you ran into Peggy, and you two became in love, and you got married and had David, John, Annie, and you are divorced and remarried Paola. Did I say
yes.
it right?
Yes,
okay.
Paola. Yep.
Okay. But now we got you at Ford. What's your experience at Ford Motor Company?
Okay. Well,
it was the one, you know, not the one in St. Paul that they took
this
away.
Was Dearborn.
Okay.
Corporate Dearborn.
Okay.
And then I was assigned, which is why I took the job, to the Twin City District here in Minneapolis-St. Paul. And it was a fun time to be at Ford Motor, 1979. The economy was booming. We had dealer meetings in the metro where they would have, oh, my God, wine, all the shrimp you could eat. I mean, this was, you know, the Towsleys, the Grossmans. And I mean, it was a fun time. This was the ending. Henry II was still alive, the Deuce, as everybody would call him. And it was fun. It was just, it was a dream. I was driving a new car.
What was your job?
I was a heavy truck, because Ford had the big Louisville line, and they were built in Louisville, Kentucky. And I was a heavy truck field engineer. So my job was, I called on the heavy truck franchise stores for Ford Motor in Minnesota, North Dakota, part of South Dakota, Northern Iowa, and Western Wisconsin. So Minot, Wesley's up there, and Fargo, Wallworks, and a lot of these places, of course, they evolved, you know, because Ford in about 1995 and that, got out of the heavy truck business. It was so competitive. I'll tell you how that happened.
Now, when you say heavy truck,
right?
Help me out here.
Okay.
I'm thinking like Peterbilt.
Yes. These are the over-the-road, the big dump trucks. Ford Motor basically owned about a third of the business. International Harvester had about a third, and the other third were broke up between Peterbilt, Kenworth, Freightliner. You know, they were.
How about Volvo?
Volvo wasn't really in the market much yet. That came later, and it was a fun job because I loved heavy trucks. It was another world. My father had trucks at his business, his mink food plant that he ran in Medford, Wisconsin. And so I had the experience there, and that's what Ford was looking for. Plus, I could teach, so I could go out. And what I did was I was the trainer for Ford. So 2-3 times a year, I'd go back to Dearborn, right across from the Henry Ford Museum, which I'll be at here. I'm taking my lovely Italian wife to go. We're going to go vacation in Detroit, in Dearborn. But she wants to see. It's a wonderful museum, Henry Ford Museum. Well, right across the street was the National Ford Training Center. So I would train the other reps. The vendors, Caterpillar, Peterbilt, or Caterpillar, Cummins, Rockwell Axle, they would, you know, go through all the changes for the year or 6-month period. Then I would put a package together and spend a week training the other 60 roughly heavy truck reps from around the country. And then, of course, we'd all go back to our home districts and get the information out and train our dealership mechanics. But I was also the guy who handed out the money. I was the rep. So in other words, in heavy truck, they didn't have many people. Now, car, they had warranty specialists, customers, you know, but in heavy truck, we were a smaller division, so you had to wear all the hats. So I'd have to come in and, say, audit a dealer, make sure they weren't cheating us on warranty. I'd have to come in and train their mechanics. The big one was, I was, again, the guy with the money. And it's very competitive out there because we used to have all those orange trucks that would, you know, work for the DOT. That was one of my accounts. I had the large accounts like Schwann's Ice Cream, DOT, Yellow Freight. I'd call on those people. But like example, the DOT, they were all Fords. They loved it.
DOT is the Department of Transportation.
So we used to call them the pumpkins, those orange pumpkins. Now a lot of them are international, and some of them are even Peterbilt.
Is there a lot of lobbying going on to get those huge contracts?
Oh, God, yes. Ford Motor couldn't do it. But I couldn't, you know, buy, say, a lunch or something like that. But Boyer Ford, who's still in business, an example, had the contract. And they would sell the state, say, 100 trucks. The big thing was they had to take 100 of the old used ones in, and that's why a lot of dealers didn't bid. But Boyer had developed a market for people buying these used trucks, little contractors and stuff like that, so they had really developed it, and they had the business for years and years. Well, basically till Ford got out of the heavy truck. And we would always have the pre-inspection meetings. Well, we'd go down to Louisville. And, of course, the DOT transportation director at the time, he always wanted to go during the race.
The Kentucky Derby.
We would go eat at the Brown Derby. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's where you saw all the beautiful people with the big hats and all that. Now, they'd stay the weekend, of course.
Mint juleps.
Oh, yes, I had a few of those. And this was the time yet when it was still socially acceptable that when you went out to lunch with a customer, you had a few drinks. I mean, that just nowadays we don't do it. And I agree it's the right way. But back in those days, and I was a younger guy starting with there. I'll tell you what, I had a lot of these guys, old World War II vets, and that their elbows were well lubricated. Okay, I'd drink my Diet Pepsis because I always became the designated driver. You make sure you get us back to the hotel, Bates. Okay, that's my job. So that's why I could, you know, didn't have to partake because I certainly didn't have a taste for the liqueurs as they had back then. But it was a wonderful business, and of course, then like I say, I'd come to a dealership. And I almost felt like a prophet or something because all of these, there'd be 5-6 people coming up to me. You the Ford rep? You the Ford rep? And I, yes. Well, my truck, that Ford, and I've got a contract, and if that thing ain't running, but I'm going to sue you, I'm going to sue, you know. So as the joke always, nobody came to see Dave Bates unless their truck didn't work. You know, nobody takes the time. You know, oh, that Ford is a wonderful, oh, we've got 60 of them in our fleet, and we deliver all our products, and life is one. No, the only time they come and see me, luckily I was physically a bigger guy, and you got real thick-skinned, needless to say, with a last name like Bates. You can imagine all you put an M in front of it, A-S-T, and you know the rest of it, but I'd been called just about every name. Amazingly, in the heavy truck world, we call it, and it's still there, it's just human nature, but casual cussing, the mechanics language, right? Oh, this blankly blank part. Yeah, da, 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 da. In other words, they're not maliciously directing at anything or anything like that. But that's casual cussing. And you get used to it, you know. Well, what always gave me the biggest fit was every so often I'd run into a lady, an owner-operator or somebody who's running a trucking company. And they would let loose with a line that would, you know, peel the paint off the wall and have Sister Teresa, you know, praying 12 rosaries. That was the toughest part for me because I could picture my mother never tolerated cursing in our house. I can still remember the taste of Liquid Joy soap in my mouth when I was about 8 years old when I said a few choice words one time that I had learned at school. And but I would sit down with them then and we'd...
I have to... You bring up a memory.
Okay.
In 1983, however long ago that was, I was going through, you know, how everybody talks to mom when they got a problem about one or another thing. And I was telling her, and I was very demonstrative, let's say, and I dropped the F-bomb on her.
Mm-hmm.
Not at her or her, but just the situation. And the next thing I knew, My face was stinging. She slapped me, and hard, not just a little tap.
Mm-hmm.
Wham, don't you ever use that word in front of me again. And, of course, you know, that's the way you grow up. You never swear around mom and dad
at all.
Your grandma and grandpa.
Yep.
You just brought back a memory.
Yep.
So please continue.
Yep. Well, they would say, well, we've got, you know, this bill or we've got this. And I generally, you know, I didn't have, you know, and depending on the economy, we would have a lot of goodwill money or not. And we always would phrase it, okay, I'll make a goodwill adjustment, non-precedent setting. You know, in other words, I'm not setting or extending your warranty, but I'm going to take care of this because you're a good customer, and we want to keep you a customer. We want you to buy the Peterbilts. We want you to buy the Fords. And then I'd always get the dealer to participate. Because once in a while, I'd have a dealer say, well, why should I? I didn't build the truck. Why should I participate? I said, because he's your customer. And if you don't want to invest in him, well, he didn't buy the truck for me, so I'm not going to invest. Oh, okay. And what I normally would ask him to do is, okay, you sell the parts on this repair at cost, and you do the labor at internal rate because you're still making a little bit of money. You know, like when you fix up your used trucks, used cars. So I'd say, okay, labor cost, internal rate, okay. And then I might pick up, say, a part of the bill. I rarely would buy the whole bill unless it was just outside of warranty because I could tell to the trucker. I says, hey, you've driven it for 18 months. Didn't you make some money with it? Well, yeah, okay. Well, you got some use out of it. Not, you know, in other words, you're down a little bit. That's why, I'll tell you what, you pay 20%. So instead of $6,000, you're only going to pay about maybe, $1,200 or so, you know. Oh, okay. That way, my philosophy was, everybody buys into it, okay? And plus, I could stretch the money. I could tell the dealer, okay, instead of helping six guys at your dealership, we can help 12 people. And sometimes, and it's amazing how, and this is any business, just saying thank you, just saying, hey, you know, that hamburger wasn't the best. Tell you what, here's a card. Next time you come here, the meal's on us. Holy smokes, you got a customer for a long time. And that was the theory behind goodwill adjustments. Amazingly, the industry, they don't do much of it right now. I guess, whatever, it just went out of fashion. It can be expensive. But anyway, that was the deal. But again, you meet very colorful people in the trucking industry.
Yeah. I had a Bravada, and I had the, what do you call it, the warranty on it,
mm-hmm.
at an outside place that mm-hmm. sells this stuff.
Right.
And it covered everything for so long,
mm-hmm.
and then it just covered the drivetrain.
Yep.
And the warranty ran out, and right after that, the drivetrain went out.
Yep.
And you almost think, do they know that?
Yeah.
So, what were most of the problems that people were having with the Ford heavy duty trucks back then?
Well, basically, most of it was you'd run into like the suspensions. You know, it's the wear items, the steering and stuff like that. The other thing I did was especially if it was an engine problem. Because it's not a Ford diesel. It's a Caterpillar. It's a Cummins, you know, whatever. I'd get a hold of those people and see if they could, excuse me, if they could also help out. And by George, they might sell, you know, Ziegler, say, okay, we'll sell the parts at cost. And my thought was the more people I get involved, the more goodwill we can spread around. Plus, you build rapport with the people. And that was probably the job I loved the best because, again, my dealers were kind of far apart because people would ask me, Dave, what do you do at Ford? Oh, I test drive radios. You what? I literally would drive from, you know, Minot down to Bismarck back to Fargo, and you'd spend 7-8 hours driving. And
when you were on the road,
mm-hmm.
South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, western Wisconsin, and what community did you find that you may have had to stay at mm-hmm. a hotel for a couple mm-hmm. of days and go to a restaurant and mm-hmm. go out and meet people? Which communities did you enjoy, and which ones did you couldn't wait to get out of?
Well, basically, most of them are pretty much all the same. But there's one, and my wife and I still go up there, Duluth. I love Duluth. It's another world. They speak a little different. It's for my wife, she loves it because it looks like the Mediterranean. The people, the Rangers up there, they have that little slang, and the restaurants, again, My wife loves it because especially the third and fourth generations up there now, they still speak Italian. They hired all those hard rock miners to mine those mines at the turn of the century up there. So there's tons. In fact, I had three, four mechanics that were Italian that came down from like U.S. Steel and Hibbing Tech, because back in the 90s, again, when, you know, the boom and bust with the steel industry, they'd come in and just wonderful people. But my wife just loves it. She goes to the Italian little pastry places up there. And so Duluth is... It's a gem.
That's, I was just going to say, gem.
Yeah.
What now, diesel, you obviously know how to build and, and put together a diesel engine and all that. So what's a big deal? It seems to me, I remember diesel fuel was cheaper than regular fuel, and now it's more expensive. Why do you think that is?
Well, they basically, what they, diesel was in such low demand, and it was kind of a spin-off, you know, product from gasoline that, for years and years and years, it was always cheaper. Well, then what happened was, of course, back starting in the early 80s, diesels came about. Oldsmobile had diesels, Cadillac. We don't remember that too much, but boy, the Ford little pickup truck had diesels.
You're not talking passenger cars.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, we sold, there was big lawsuits over all the history of the Oldsmobile diesel engine. But anyway, they and what happened was, of course, the usage started to go up. So, and the mileage went up and all that. Gasoline went down. And then here's the reality of it. The reason diesel fuel gives you so much more power per cubic, say, gallon volume, there's many, many, I don't have it top of my head anymore, but there's many more BTUs, more energy. And because of that, they started marketing now gasoline, and because you can make a lot of gasoline out of diesel fuel if you keep refining it and cracking it down. So what you're paying for is how much energy are you getting out of your volume. That's what switched everything. And now diesel fuel costs more, yes, because you can haul more with it. In Europe, as an example now, diesel, 70% of the cars that are sold in Europe are diesel. I have our very close friend, the Strobels. He's a test track engineer for Porsche in Stuttgart. Even Porsche has diesel-powered car and all that. And again, if you remember, Volkswagen, remember their big hullabaloo at changing the emission codes on their diesel engines? Because they wanted to sell more diesels in the United States. We have different emissions on our diesel engines. You don't see them in cars quite yet. But in Europe, they want everything diesel over there.
Well, here's what I think when you say diesel.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think big, you know, bigger car or truck. Then I think noisy. Then I think you can't turn them off.
Well, they've got that all fixed. I've driven.
I've heard some.
Yeah. Well, there's some that can be a little, but all your new cars. And again, in most of the world, when we travel, and if we go to the Far East and all that, all the cars are diesels now. That's they get better efficiency. The engines last longer. It's a more efficient engine. You get
so that turning them off is okay now.
Oh sure, yeah. In fact,
you know how they.
No. You don't see the big trucks anymore idle. They've got shutdown deals. In fact, most of the big trucks, what they'll have is they'll have. In fact, Thermo King builds them, and other people. They'll have a little unit that keeps the engine coolant, the engine water, you want to say, coolant water, warm on those cold days. So, one, the engine stays nice and warm. Two, the driver can sleep in the sleeper, and he's running a little one or two little cylinder diesel engine that might take 3 to 5 tenths of, a half gallon for the whole night instead of running that big old, you know, almost 1,000 cubic inch diesel engine there. So, no, it's changed. And now with all the electronic logs, my son, John, drives truck for Smith's Transportation, hauls custom meat to New York City and back, and just loves it. I think he's crazy because, boy, that's tough driving, but he loves it. Gets extra money. But anyway, they can tell when he shifts, when he stops to go to the bathroom, how fast he goes at any moment. And the logs now, since January, are all electronic. So there's no more the old days where you could run one log you give to the DOT and one log you give to the boss, you get all your money. And they don't tolerate that because basically that company with electronic log can punch in your ID and they can go, that John Bates, hell, he's been driving for 15 hours. You're only allowed 11. And guess who else can do that? Department of Transportation a lot. And if they go, if they start really want to crack down on a company, they'll start checking. They'll just call up the state and say, pull this truck over when it comes up. And it's all GPS, so they know exactly where you are. So that's why, in all fairness, truck drivers are making some excellent money.
Well, it seems like half the semi-trailers on the back of it, it says,
absolutely.
Need a job?
Yeah.
Call.
Well, the reason is they can't find, I shouldn't say can't. It's difficult to find drivers that have a clean record because who runs the industry? The insurance companies. If you've got a DWI or OWI, whatever, you're going to have a difficult time getting on because, I'm sorry, we can't insure you. The rate's too high.
What's OWI?
Still driving under the influence or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. So the other thing is speeding tickets. You have a bunch of speeding tickets. You could lose your job. I'll tell you what, the days of the cowboy or the old Burt Reynolds show, you know, movies that they used to have with the truckers and all that.
Wildcatters.
Yeah, wildcatters. Now, you still have owner-operators, but it's very difficult for them to cheat and extremely hard. And that's good because, boy, I can remember seeing truckers that were all pilled up, hadn't slept for 3 days.
Denny's.
Mm-hmm. And it was there. But here's the thing. My son... Good Lord, his W-2, I about tipped over, almost $70,000. And he's home on weekends. Plus all these trucking companies, to get good drivers, good professional drivers, you don't drive, say, from here to Dallas. You only drive from here to Kansas City. You then pick up the next truck and drive it back home. You can be home almost every night. They are really accommodating. Your company in town here, McLean's, look at the newspaper. $7,500 sign-on bonus to be a driver. It's a wonderful, and that's my, again, that's where I come from.
And we have a truck fleet right here in Waterford Township, Taylor Trucking.
There you go, exactly.
And I had the pleasure of interviewing him, and this was probably 10 years ago, but what you're saying now has even... He was telling me about how the computers do all this work, and, right. and they can find a driver anytime, day or night.
Yep.
And now you're telling me that this is even more severe in reference to observations. Yeah. Well, do you have any stories when you were the manager of the diesel department for Ford Company?
Well,
you got any stories out there?
Some of the – I remember one of the first times I was up at Ford. And I was there for a two-week orientation. So I was up on Telegraph Road at the big Holiday Inn. I was sitting there with six other people, got hired by Ford Motor. And the waitress gal comes over, an older gal, and she says, oh, what do you boys want for breakfast? And then she says, what you here for? And I says, well, I got hired by Ford Motor Company. Oh, you got hired by the Fords. I never forgot that. Because there in Dearborn, I mean, it's the Fords. It's a family. And that's one thing was different. GM was the corporate monster, okay. Well, Ford, and to this day, it's still the financial committee is pretty much staffed by Ford people and all that. Most of the preferred stock is still held by the Fords. And I became, basically, I've got a huge collection, which I'm going to donate to the Henry Ford Museum on old Ford memorabilia.
Oh, and weren't they the only ones that weren't bailed out by Obama?
And you know why that was?
Why?
Okay. And this was, again, I raced all Chevy engines, okay? But I worked for Ford Motor, I always told people. I just finished a 1967 Corvette restoration I bought when I just got out of college. But again, Ford paid all the bills, and Northwest Airlines. But basically, Henry Ford, when the Great Depression started, was just furious with Wall Street. And, you know, because they made money with money. They didn't sell a product. Henry said, you pay a fair wage, you make a good product, and you hire good people, and that's what makes this economy going. Well, he lost a lot of money, and he says, never again. He put all his money in land. If you take a look at the Upper Peninsula, if you look at North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, you'll see FLC, FLC, FLC. Even Lakeland Ford, that whole thing there, was in South St. Paul. That whole beautiful spot at the intersection of, Highway 61 or whatever and 494, that was all owned by, FLC. Southdale was originally owned by FLC. Ford Land company. Henry was the wealthiest person in the United States until Howard Hughes came along. Okay, single, and he owned the company. He stole it from the Dodge brothers, fair and square, as he always said. But he took all his money and plowed it into land. Land, land, land. Now, you look at it, it'll say FLC, but it'll say lease to Weyerhaeuser, lease to Georgia Pacific. And he had the iron mines. He had the Thunderbird iron mine. Henry, that was his deal. Well, what they did is, when the economy started to go south in like 2006 and 7, Mulaney, who came from Boeing, he was the CEO from Boeing, he took, and the joke was among us all us old Ford guys, is he leveraged everything, including the Blue Oval, which is the second most recognized thing in the world, Coca-Cola being number one, and got a $23 billion line of credit at the bank, basically. I'm being a little simplistic, but that's what he did. So when the crunch came, we didn't need any of this TARP money, they called it. General Motors basically went bankrupt. Chrysler is owned by a bunch of guys now. Okay, Ford Motor had enough money to make it through. And that says a lot about Henry. The old man saved the company again. And that was...
Well, I'm trying to think. It wasn't Mark Twain. It was Will Rogers, mm-hmm. I think, that said, buy land, they don't make it anymore.
Exactly. And that's exactly what Ford did, the old man Ford. And he was a character. Oh, Lordy, there's stories about him. I never met him. When I was teaching at the Henry Ford Training Center, I was always told, you never go up to the third floor here, kid. Okay, how come? Cause why? You want to work here? Oh, yeah, you know, and that was the custodian, you know. Well, finally, I was there one night, and a younger custodian was there, and I says, hey, can I see what's up there? Well, okay, you won't say anything, will you? No. Well, that's the penthouse. Now, this is overlooking the old Ford Airport, which is now the Ford Test Track. Okay, that's right in Dearborn. And he says, let's go. So up we went. And he had a special key, opened it. And here, picture walking into a James Bond bedroom, bar, studio, right? Middle 60s, you can just, you know, all that Formica, you know, and the stainless steel and everything. That's where Henry the Deuce entertained his girlfriends. He was married. I think he was divorced a few times even. Well, anyway, oh, my God. Oh, yes, this is where the Deuce brings his sweethearts. And we have to keep it clean. And he says, look, there were fresh chocolates, there were fresh everything. Oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. Because he didn't pass away, I think, 1983 or 84. I started at Ford in 79. So I was one of the few people to go into the penthouse. Since then, that whole building has been torn down, and they built another part of the museum over by it. But that's, I got to see Henry's, and he was a womanizer. No two ways about it. But he loved racing, the GT Fords, you know, at Le Mans. He was tired of having, because that's the city my wife is from, Milan, Italy. That's the home of Maserati, Ferrari, Pirelli tires. And so they, back in the 60s there, he went over there, and the story goes they broke a windshield. A bird flew into one of the cars during testing. They didn't have another windshield. He went, bought a first-class ticket for himself and a first-class ticket for the windshield to sit next to him, and took it over to Le Mans, France, and to get in. And, of course, that first year they went 1-2-3. To this day, I can get my wife's relatives just totally irritated in Milan when I go, so what do you think about the Ford GT40? And by that time, they're already speaking words in Italian that I can't remember.
Does that have anything to do with Shelby?
Yes. Carroll Shelby was involved with that, yes. But that was an all-out corporate effort. Henry the Deuce. And he was the oldest son of Edsel. See, old man Henry only had one child, Edsel. That was it. Edsel had four kids. And the Deuce was the oldest. Then was Benson. He died in the late 50s. He was a stylist. And the Deuce was a wonderful guy, because in 1944, Henry was starting to lose it. He had basically dementia coming on. And he was firing all the people. And we were running a war. So basically the defense secretary came to both Clara, the wife, and Henry and said, you got to get somebody to run this company other than Henry, or we're going to lose a war effort. You're building B-24s. I mean, this was, okay, they were critical, just like GM was. So they called in, they pulled Edsel, or excuse me, pulled Henry II, Edsel's kid. He was a captain of a destroyer in the Pacific. They pulled him out and said, okay, you're honorable discharge. You got to run the company. And he basically said, okay, I can't do it myself. He's the one who hired McNamara and the Whiz Kids away from the Air Force. And he knew he didn't have the horsepower, in a sense, to run it himself. But then there were the four kids, and the second one then was William Clay. William Clay's family, William Clay in 1962 took one of his quarterly business Ford bonus checks and bought the Detroit Lions. That's why it's called Ford Stadium. And the Ford family paid 100% for that stadium. They took no money out of Detroit or anything because, of course, you know, the city is struggling. And then the youngest one is Josephine. And she married a Ford. Just happened to be, you know, just happened to happen. Anyway, and of course, her name is on the Fokker Trimotor that's sitting at William Perry, I believe it's Perry, flew over the South Pole with that airplane. And on the side, it was sponsored by Edsel. But Edsel died in 1944. But that's, it's just, there's such a history, a family history with Ford Motor. But we should probably jump ahead now.
Oh, well, we have all the time in the world. I do this show every day. You don't, you aren't committed to between 9 and 11 a lot. So, yeah, you're a very good storyteller. And I've had professional storytellers on the air. And you're very good, and I enjoy it. And, of course, I like to respond, if I can, and say there is a connection. When I was a kid, I lived on the west side of St. Paul on George Avenue. And that went right up to past Stryker up to Smith Avenue. And then you crossed the High Bridge. Okay, I would walk up to the High Bridge, and then I would hitchhike. I was going out to St. Thomas Military Academy. Well, that's a long bridge. And anyhow, I didn't get a ride, so I walked across the bridge. Now I'm walking up to 7th Street, and then I can't remember the name of the street as it comes out. A car came around the corner, and I looked at it, and it looked like a horse collar. And it got closer, and I looked at it, and I could identify cars. I was, you know, a kid. And it gets there, and I go, my God, it's an Edsel. Now, this had to be in, like, 1957.
Yep. They first came out.
Yeah.
Late 57 as a 58 model.
Okay. Yep. And I went, wow, look at that. And I didn't, and to this day, I don't know if I like it or dislike it. I've heard people slam it a lot. But I kind of got a kick out of it. But it is kind of...
It was ahead of its time in styling and everything. We had a heck of a recession then. You know, with Eisenhower as president, we finally imploded from the war effort. I mean, they were finally, you know, basically running out of parts to build for all the airplanes and everything else. We just didn't need anymore. So the country was going down. And, of course, sadly, the term Edsel became a negative, you know.
Yes.
You don't hear much anymore about it, but at one time it did.
Well, I had to tell you that story, and that's what storytelling to me for the recipient is knowledge. You learn more, but also be able to connect and say, oh, yeah, now that's what's going on. We'll take a break here on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on, and see what's going to happen in reference to.
When it's time for preventative maintenance on your new car or truck, you don't just take your car into anyone. At Witt Brothers Service in Northfield, you know you found a name you can trust. To start, we're a Napa Auto Care Center, so the technicians we employ are experts trained in every aspect of your vehicle's maintenance. This gives you the peace of mind in knowing that everything we do is accepted under the terms of your manufacturer's warranty. Add to that the fact that we use quality Napa parts that meet or exceed original equipment and specifications. And you have the one place where you can entrust all of your vehicles. Come see Witt Brothers Service in downtown Northfield today.
Quality is assured when you deal with Mike at Fox Landscaping. See what a difference new landscaping can do for you. Call Mike Fox at 645-9091 about professional landscape consultation. Fox Landscaping in Northfield.
We're back live and in color on KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota. 95.1, the 1 FM, 1080 on your AM dial. Music from 1972, the year my guest graduated from Medford High School in Wisconsin. Do you have a feeling you know this song?
Oh, I know the song, but I can... Oh, Mrs. Jones.
Yes.
Me and
Mrs. Jones. Oh, yes. This was a slow dance one.
Oh, yeah. Belly rubbing, we used to call it.
Last dance, belly rubbing.
Yep.
You know who's singing it?
No, this I don't think so, no.
I'll tell you then. Billy Paul.
Oh, no, I wouldn't have guessed that.
And Mrs. Jones was heroin.
Oh.
If you listen
really?
To the song.
Yeah. Is that right? That I didn't know. I'll be darned. Wow.
It's 23 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Dave Bates is my guest, and Davey has a whole lot of experience. Right now we have him at the Ford Motor Company in Dearborn, and we're going to get him out of Ford and get into other parts of his life. I do want to remind you, he is a pilot, and he owns his own Stearman biplane. Mm-hmm. Tail dragger, and we're going to go flying. Are you going to do tricks with me?
Only if you want to. You're the boss. You're the boss. Oh, yes, because okay. when I called on Schwann's Ice Cream with Ford, they, of course, own, a lot of people don't realize this, but they own Red Baron Pizza. And, of course, they, up until a few years ago, they ran a whole fleet of Stearman.
I flew with them.
Okay, well, there you go. My airplane is the same airplane. It was built by Boeing in World War II as a PT, primary trainer. And a good friend of mine was a pilot for him. And he said the worst thing, and those airplanes, in the summertime, they would hang 15, 20 air fresheners in those open cockpits because so many times they were used for business promotions, right? You know, selling, marketing their pizzas. So they'd get the guys all have a good time and maybe one or two too many beers. They take them up and they all want to go around. Well, then they might not feel so good. Well, you just can't get that airplane clean on the inside. There's so many nicks and crannies. And they said that was the worst thing on a hot day with the sun baking on it. You'd jump inside of it. Oh, that's why they'd keep the engine running because the propeller would blow the wind over the open cockpit. Otherwise, it would be a little aroma was a little rough.
I love those little there's another connection, David.
Mm-hmm.
People were promoting the Baron pizza.
Yep.
Tombstone, not Tombstone.
No, God, don't say that. Because, that's Marvin's was his, I'll tell you a story about that. But that was my brother being the general sales rep for Tombstone. I would show up at Schwann's in Marshall once a month because they had, thousands of Ford ice cream trucks along with GM. They bought both. But I'd always walk in either with a Tombstone hat on or I'd have a notepad with Tombstone or Tombstone memorabilia because my brother would give them. Because the two knew each other. And I would never say anything. I'd just walk in. I'd always had to say hello to Marvin. He was the president of the company. I had an older brother, Tom. That's why they had Stearman's. His brother, Tom, was a flew F-4F Wildcats in World War II. So when they bought the pizza company in 1980 out of Salinas, Kansas, what are we going to name it? And they came up with the name Red Baron because then Tom says, we're going to have some Stearman's. I'm going to have me a Stearman to fly, and the company's going to pay for it. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
So that's how it all came about.
Well, they were doing a promotion, and I can't remember who, but I ended up doing an interview with the guy. And then I took my portable equipment, and at that time it was more bulky compared to today.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in the front.
Yep.
And off we go, and I said, you could do whatever you want to do, and I was doing a recording.
Oh, my goodness.
Right now, we're at Satan Airport. I'm getting in the plane now. Mm-hmm. I'm seated. Okay, you started up the engine. All right, we're going down the runway. If you can hear me, it's pretty noisy in the front seat here. All right, we're takeoff. Okay, now we're going to do... We have fun. It was fun.
Well, they were designed as primary trainers because, again, the government didn't want to lose any of those cadets. And those were well stressed. You cannot hurt a Stearman. And we'll get into more of the airplane.
Oh,
but we better wrap up my time with Henry Ford.
Okay, let's go ahead. folks, he keeps, he being David, keeps saying, oh, my gosh, we got to get going here. I said, David, your stories are very interesting. And I've done multiple interviews with individuals because of the stories that are told on the way, which is the fun part of doing this radio show. David Bates lives off Highway 60 west of Faribault, and we're shooting the bull about his life, and we talked about Ford, we talked about diesel engines, and so now you have to, don't have to, but your career with Ford was how long, then what?
Well, it was about 16 years.
Really?
Yeah. And then what happened was Ford... We thought we had it made. Ford had come out with a new Louisville truck. Cost about $1.2 billion to develop, you know, just a new model. And all of us heavy truckers, we all, well, we've got it made. We'll be here another 15, 20 years. That's how long they'll carry that platform, that chassis. And we'll be able to retire out of here. We got her made. Well, after about a year of production, all of a sudden I get a phone call on a Sunday night from my boss up in Dearborn. Batesy, yep, come on up to Dearborn. Oh, am I getting toasted? That was the word for being fired, you know. No. But you got to be up here. Well, how come? Can't tell you. Are we getting rid of heavy truck? Can't tell you. But we got a big meeting at Cobo Hall, downtown Detroit. Everybody's going to be there. Okay. So next morning, hop on a good old Northwest airplane, and off we go. Ken Smith, our VP, comes out and says, well, boys, and he was a wonderful guy. He didn't pull no punches. He says, good morning. Now I'm going to ruin your day. He says, we're getting out of heavy truck business. Whew. You just hear everybody just, we kind of heard rumors because, again, it was such a competitive business. And my old friend Ron Butler was the rep for Chicago, and he stood up. And, I mean, you could hear, there's 1,200 of us in this Cobo Hall, and he could hear a pin drop. And he says, boss, we do well. We've got over one-third of the market. We work cheap, work hard for you. How come we got to get out of it? And he was a very articulate man, but he could, you know, play a very common person. And everybody just kind of laughed a little. And he says, Ron, I'd take you guys into battle anytime. He says, but here's the story. He says, at Louisville, the truck plant, largest production plant in the world, because by then Chernobyl had happened. See, otherwise there was a Russian plant where they made all their military and civilian. Well, anyway, that was, of course, destroyed in that nuclear problem. But he says, here's the deal. We build 365 trucks a day. Peterbilt only builds 50. You know, we're number one. We can mass produce these huge, big trucks. We make about, after we net, and then pay you in Chicago, we make about $1,000 corporate net profit after tax and everything. And Ron hollers back, well, geez, boss, that's $365,000 a day profit. Hell, I can afford lunch in Chicago if you'd come out on that. And everybody laughed, you know, because we needed some comic relief. And Ken says, you're right, Ron, but here's the deal. We're coming up with our new F-250, 350, 450, 550, the new Super Duty line of trucks. Those trucks, we make our own engines, rear axles, everything. We will net on each one of those trucks, after all taxes, after paying your salary, everything, about $5,000. And we'll build 1,500 of those a day here. So what would you do, Ron? I'd build the big old trucks and tell them where to go. And everybody laughed. But we all knew then that, yeah, it was the right business decision. Because what amounted, you're selling a $100,000 truck and you make $1,000. Come on. You're better off to put your money in the bank. You know, and they're not paying much. So that's what happened. And that's when Ford had money. That's about 1994, 95, right in there. And actually 93, they announced it well ahead of time. They said, we've got 2 years before we unravel this. We're going to be selling it. They ultimately sold it to Mercedes-Benz, which also at that time owned Freightliner. The Germans, being so efficient, they took our Ford Oval. And the truckers out there will know this. They didn't change that even. They just put an S in there. They called it the Sterling truck. And so that's what happened. They moved production then out of the Louisville plant up to St. Thomas, Ontario. So technically it was an import. It came from Canada. They built it for 10 years. That's what they were required to by the deal with Ford Motor. And then they had to support the dealers and parts for another 10 years. So that's what happened. Ford Motor, though, again, they had money. They said, we have over 200 people from HR around the outside here of the auditorium. You'll find where your name is. Go to them. You got three options, and you got a couple of years to think about it. This was phenomenal. I mean, I can't say enough about Ford. We were all sick to our stomach because we knew there's change, and most people don't like change. Okay. But they said, you can either stay with Ford, but most of you are going to get moved around, or you can join the new company, but we don't really know the name yet, and you're going to have to move around, or you can take a package. So I went and got all my information. The package was a year and a half salary. Not too shabby. Plus medical coverage. I mean, again, they had money back. That was before the big recession here lately. But they treated us well. I opted then to take the package. I built such a beautiful home. I had my hangar at the Faribault Airport. I couldn't move. I could not move. I should have. Financially, I should have moved. They wanted me to go into light truck service engineering. They begged me, you know, Davey, we'll do this. I got two airplanes. We'll pay to move your airplanes. I got a hangar. We'll buy your hangar. And the way they handled the houses, I would go out and get three appraisals. Then they would send theirs in, and we'd average them out, and they'd write you a check. They'd give me 90 days stay at the Residence Inn in Dearborn until I got a place. They'd give me 6 months' salary for incidentals. I mean, I told them I've got engine parts. We'll package everything up and move it. I
says, were you married at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And
Peggy.
To Peggy. And
okay.
Peggy was kind of, my parents were still alive. Her parents, we'd go back almost every weekend over to Wisconsin, so the kids got to play with grandpas, all the grandpas and grandmas, uncles and aunts. I was too much of a homebody. Sad to say.
Let me ask you some technical questions, mm-hmm. if I may. Did you see the advent of luxury in the cabs develop, or was it already happening when you started with Ford?
I hate to say it, but here's another fact-filled story for you. I remember I was out in Williston, and here walk in these two wheat farmers. Biv overalls, you know, chewing a piece of wheat, just classic, right? And they walk up to this 1980 pickup truck, Ford pickup. And the one guy, golly, who in the heck would pay $5,000 for a pickup truck? I didn't pay that much for my first house. And I remember walking over to him. I says, hey, guys, boy, you two are a couple old sod busters, aren't you? And they said, who are you? And I told them I worked at Ford, and, oh, we struck up a heck of a conversation. And then what happened here, I was over at Peterson Ford here just a couple
in
years.
Kenyon,
a couple years ago. And old Milo came to my wedding and all that stuff, so I was over there. And I tell you, it's just like Yogi Berra would say, it's deja vu all over again. I'm standing looking at about a 2014 diesel platinum rancher, good Lord, leather interior, dually four-wheel drive, you know, okay. $74,000 sticker? And Jerry Peterson, the son, and that was sitting there along with Chuck, the salesperson.
Did you ever get in the card games with
Milo? No. He's legendary on that, though.
I used to play poker with him.
They called him the Boulevard Kid over there in Kenyon. Oh,
yep.
God, yes. So we sat there, and I says, I didn't pay this much for my first house in Shakopee. I paid $42,000 in 1977 for my first house. And Chuck, the salesman who I've known for my whole life, okay, he looked at me and said, you are really old. And you know how all of a sudden my whole life flashed back to Wesley Motor Company in Minot, North Dakota, and I go, oh, my God, I am old. I have, you know. So you put that in perspective. And basically, you're right. That's basically in about the late 80s, GM, everybody. I mean, in all fairness, look at the price and look at the quality of these pickup trucks running around. Granted, there's work trucks out there. Don't get me wrong. But just to haul a lunchbox or a bag of leaves, look at the trucks that we Americans drive. You don't see that in Europe.
I see the commercials that they have, both Chevrolet and Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm correct, the Ford outsells anybody when it comes to pickups.
Ford Motor Company will protect to the point where they will literally fall on the sword, as they would say, corporate sword, because their cash cow is the F-Series pickup trucks.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where they make their corporate profit. They literally, the Ford Festiva, the Ford Focus, some of those are even loss leaders. They will have the car just because GM and Toyota and everybody else has it. They make very little profit.
What's a Festiva?
Festiva is the smallest little Ford they make, and they don't sell many of them. They're very, very popular. Ford is the number one imported car in Europe. Which
so that's not a gas driven car.
Yeah, it's a gas driven. Oh yeah.
And well, what is the Focus then?
The Focus is just a little bit bigger sedan.
Okay.
And then the Fusion. I drive a Fusion.
Okay.
And then you get into your Taurus, Ford, which doesn't sell too well. That's that the one for. But Ford.
Did they have electric cars or whatever you call
it? I have a hybrid. I'm driving a Ford Fusion Hybrid. I absolutely love it. Now they have, and that's a 2010. I've got 182,000 on it. Love it. I average about 34 to 36 miles per gallon. And in the summer, winter, it'll drop to about 31, 32.
So do you start it, and it's an engine, piston-driven mm-hmm. engine that makes it, noise like everybody else?
Sure, but it may if I start it. And if the battery's at a certain charge, it'll show electric. And it's so funny because I'll pull away from the gas pump at Quick Trip, and there's no noise. No, everybody's looking at me. But then it'll automatically, if I accelerate, it'll switch to the engine. It's seamless.
I was parked out here in front of the radio station. Oh, by the way, David Bates is my guest here on KYMN Radio at 7 minutes before 11 o'clock, so that I'm getting in my car, and this other car starts moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, what the heck? And then one time I was sitting in my car, and just put it out of park, mm-hmm. and I thought I was moving forward. Right. I go, what the heck? I got my foot on the brake, and it's a car pulling out. You can't hear it.
Can't hear it.
It'll be a little dangerous. 7 minutes before 11 o'clock, I've got a question. We have to take a break. You're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair on 1080 AM Radio, KYMN, and, of course, the one. 95.1 FM. And don't forget that coming up at 11 o'clock, just 7 minutes away, 15 with the author, and it's going to be a very interesting interview about a guy and his past and the struggles that they have had based on his culture.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living, conveniently located in downtown Northfield, has got a big case of spring fever. Our tenants embrace life to the fullest, and one way of doing that is cheering on the Minnesota Twins. Sure, we've got beautiful apartments, great food, and all the supportive services needed, but another thing we get really excited about is baseball. To catch up on the latest Twins news and get a tour, call me, Kathy Olson, at 507-650-0141.
Getting new furniture sounds fun. Shopping for furniture, not so much. High-pressure sales leave you wanting to get out of the store as quick as possible, which can mean bringing home furniture that's not right for you, or nothing at all. Not at America's Mattress and Furniture To Go in Dundas. Our low-pressure salespeople are there to help, but allow you to browse for as long as you need to find the right furniture or mattress for you. Stop into America's Mattress and Furniture To Go in Dundas and see how relaxing furniture shopping can be.
Your home, auto, and life are important to you. That's why the Northfield Insurance Agency works hard to provide you with the right protection. Kevin and Stan offer the products you need with the premier service you deserve. They carry business, auto, farm, homeowners, commercial, and bonds. Northfield Insurance is your independent agent, and they're connected with many insurance companies providing you with the lowest possible rates. That's the Northfield Insurance Agency.
Oh, what's the name of this song?
It's Candyman, and it's Sammy Davis
Jr.
Jr.
No, this is my theory. Change this into a Christmas song.
Yes, absolutely.
I swear to gosh,
who can make a sunrise?
It would be a fun Christmas song,
yep.
You know, about Santa. All right, we are wrapping it up today, but Dave Bates, I want you to come back, but can we have 5 minutes here.
Okay.
And I have to ask you, did you ever have any connection to the St. Paul Ford plant, the truck plant?
Not really, because that was the what they call the assembly division. I was in heavy truck parts and service division.
Okay.
We would have meetings there, we would do a little bit, but they were their own little world, and sadly now that's gone.
And I knew a guy that worked there and was making very good money, but he'd call in sick, and he also would have back pain and couldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And the work he did, if I remember correctly, is he sat on a rolling dolly-like chair and put in blinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Wayne, if you ever want to get bored, go to work and put blinkers on a car or put a bumper on a car, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why evidently they call in sick, and then they'd have injury, and the insurance would take it and take care of them and all that.
Yep.
And I thought, that would, I owned my own business. Right. I mean, I don't want people cheating.
No, that's it reminds me, and like I say, next time we get together, we'll talk about Northwest Airlines, because my mechanics, we got some a snowstorm coming in. I got to have you guys on those de-icer trucks. The flight's got to go out on time and that. And then the one mechanic, well, I don't know. You know, I kind of feel an eye infection coming on. I says, what do you mean eye infection? I don't know if I can see coming to work tomorrow. I mean, and they'd be there, but I'm just saying. Or they'd say, I got a little dose of the flu. I said, what the heck flu you got? Oh, a little bit of the sunshine flu, you know, and all those in that
well,
world.
My heroes in airlines were Sun Country.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen these television shows where this is before the internet and all that, where they'd show how the guys with that handling baggage could get into your baggage and steal things,
mm-hmm.
And lose the whole damn thing, and mm-hmm. then clean out what they want, and then they call and say, oh, we found your bag or something like that. You were right firsthand on that.
I'll save that for our next session, because I was involved with one where literally we lost close to about $1.2 million over 3 years.
Wow.
At Northwest Airlines. And because laptop computers, expensive cameras, video were disappearing. And Northwest Airlines, the old company, was, of course, self-insured. We had to pay the customer. And I'll save that one. That was a very interesting story.
Because I got certain questions I do want to ask. But how many airplanes do you own?
Two.
And you got the Stearman tail dragger.
Yeah, and then I have a 1940 Aranca tail dragger that looks kind of like a Piper Cub.
Uh-huh.
It's a high wing, front and rear seating,
okay.
with a little 90 horse. That's my civil one. So if somebody comes out and looks at the Stearman and goes, oh, my God, I don't know if I can get it. Well, how about this other airplane? They go, oh, yeah, that looks good. Because that one is much more tame. It's doesn't have 1,000 cubic inch. You don't have helmet and goggles. And I always tell them it's like a Harley in the sky.
All right. And, it has to be a nice day. So,
yes.
Because it can get cold in a biplane. I had experience flying a PT-9, I think it was. It was a trainer for the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife bought me an hour. And the people that owned it lived in Tennessee. And it was a woman that was a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And she would show me a trick, and then I would do the trick.
Mm-hmm.
She would show me a trick, then I would do the trick.
Mm-hmm.
And blah, blah, back and forth. Then I thought, well, this is nothing. I'm fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then she said, okay, we're going to do them all together. But I'll do them all together, then
right.
you do them all together.
Yep.
So she did them all together, and I'm going, that's when I start mm-hmm. really feeling, that's great. Well, then she said, okay, Wayne, let's your turn. Well, mm-hmm. we would do one, and I wasn't just one into the other.
Right.
I kind of paused a little bit.
Yep.
But I'll tell you what, when you want to get some speed and they say, aim at the ground until it's 180,
mm-hmm.
that you want me to aim this plane at the ground and
yes.
get it going faster?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you had to do that to do the trick.
Yep.
Hey, the time is up. It's time for us to join Terry Knight with 15 with the Author. I have my pocket pal here, and we'll look at yours, and we'll find out what date you'd be available next, all right?
Sounds fantastic. Thank
David
you very
Bates
much.
Here, great guest. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to KYMN 1080 Radio AM from Northfield, Minnesota, and on FM 95.1 FM, The One, from Northfield.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
Down the Up Staircase tells the story of one Harlem family across three generations, connecting its journey to the historical and social forces that transformed Harlem over the past century. Bruce D. Haynes, my guest today, and his wife and co-author Sima Selovich, capture the tides of change that pushed blacks forward through the 20th century. The Great Migration, the Harlem Renaissance, the early civil rights victories, the Black Power and Black Arts movements. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
Oh, thanks, Terry.
So, in many ways, your family really defied the odds. All four great-grandparents on your father's side owned land in the South as early as 1880. How did that specific piece of your history influence you? Or did you
know that?
Well,
you know, I think land was important because it was a catalyst for my grandparents' education. On my father's side came my paternal side came from Lowndes County, and my paternal side came from Pine Bluff. But both sides of the family owned land, and that provided a catalyst for my father's parents becoming highly educated at the turn of the century. My grandfather migrated to New York